Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Good afternoon. Alisa Jaffe in for Ken Schramm, who's taken some much-needed time off. It's 6 minutes after 12. We've got a full plate for you this afternoon. We'll be talking about so many things, but you just heard Nancy saying the Seattle Parks Department is shutting down the idea of that zip line over in Lincoln Park in West Seattle. We've been on the phone with the Seattle Parks Department all morning trying to get somebody to talk about it, and they said, nope, we're just going to send you a press release. Because, boy, did they get an earful last night from people over in West Seattle who said, don't do this to our park, even though this could mean $60,000 a year for the Parks Department, because it's hurting for money. But money was the main focus today for Republicans, House Republicans, pushing ahead today with plans to vote to repeal President Obama's health care reform law, despite the Democratic objections that this move is just a huge waste of time. They're saying, hey, taxes were the number one issue today. And what we have, House Speaker John Boehner from Ohio said repealing the bill is the right thing to do for the American economy.
You add it all up, the tax increases in this health care law will take at least $675 billion out of our pockets over the next 10 years.
You know, there are so many different layers to this. It's so difficult to really understand what is going on. And Garrett Fenton knows more than I know, that's for sure. Garrett is an attorney back in D.C., and your law firm has worked on lobbying with the health care reform bill. You've been following this since 2008, so you've read so many pages, probably more pages than you care to remember, Garrett. But I appreciate you helping us to understand what this all means to us today.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
So let's begin. They're talking now about taxes, that that's what the buzzword is today with their repeal vote, vote number 31. And how would we be impacted? Because they're saying there are 20 new taxes included in this health reform law. What does that mean to us, the taxpayer?
Well, that's right. I mean, there are a number of new tax provisions or penalty provisions that are being labeled as tax provisions that are going to affect various businesses, small businesses, large businesses, insurance companies, individuals. Obviously, one of the cornerstone pieces of the legislation is this individual mandate tax that was sort of the main part of the Supreme Court decision and the decision to uphold the statute that all Americans have to either obtain health insurance coverage or pay a penalty tax over to the IRS with their annual tax returns, income tax returns. That's, obviously been a big focus for the Republican Party as they've been going forward with this, the challenge to Obamacare. That's really one of the main tax provisions that's going to affect individuals. It doesn't go into effect until 2014, but it is a direct tax that's going to be levied on these individuals.
Okay, but I can already hear people, the wheels turning, Garrett, if they say, there's no way I can afford $5,000 to insure my family. There's no way I can afford $10,000 or whatever it's going to cost if I have to buy my own health insurance. And then they find out that the penalty or this small tax is what, $95?
That's right. It can be as low as $95 for the first year that it's in effect in 2014. Now, that'll go up in future years. But it's still, for certain people, for a lot of people, will or may at least be much less expensive to just go ahead and pay that penalty than it will be to actually go out and buy health insurance coverage, starting in 2014 into the future.
Can you see that as a workaround? People may be saying, okay, if I put down about $100, I can do it and I'll still get taken care of when I go to the doctor. It's easier than paying the $5,000 if I have an emergency.
I think that's right. I think that's a major issue that you hit on. I think a lot of people, especially with a lot of the reforms that are now taking effect where there can't be pre-existing condition exclusions and there's guaranteed issue, people have to be able to get health insurance coverage regardless of their health status. People may be seeing this as a way to get around it where they could just pay this relatively lower penalty tax as opposed to paying for coverage. And then if they ever end up needing insurance in the future, they could attempt to go and buy coverage at that point since they can't be denied.
Now, this vote, we know nothing's probably going to happen after today, right?
That's right.
It's, what do they call it, the go-nowhere or the show vote, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, the conventional wisdom is that even if this passes the House of Representatives, it's not going to go anywhere in the Senate. which obviously would be needed in order for it to ever go anywhere. And then if somehow it did pass the Senate, it would go to the president's desk. And you know, it just doesn't seem like it's going to go anywhere, regardless of what happens in the House today.
And in about an hour from now, we're going to have Dave Reichert, Congressman Dave Reichert, call in and tell us how it is going back there and his views on it. But first, why don't you tell us, Garrett Fenton, how this could change the landscape of health care?
Well, I think, you know, just in general, the landscape of healthcare is going to be changing dramatically in the near future. 2014 is going to be a big year where a lot of reforms are going to be coming into effect under this legislation, assuming that it's still in place in its current form. That's obviously one big aspect to consider is how is this going to change? You know, there obviously are going to be efforts to repeal it and continuing into the future efforts to repeal it, depending on what happens in the upcoming election. That could have a big impact on possible you know, tweaks to the legislation in the future, how, you know, repealing certain provisions of it and things like that. So I think it's the landscape. It's kind of hard to tell exactly how it's going to look, you know, going into the future, but it is going to be dramatically changed regardless of what happens. Even if the law stays in place as it currently is, there are going to be a lot of changes going into effect. One of the biggest ones being that health insurance exchanges are going to be up and running in 2014.
Explain those. The thing is, I'm wondering, you know, right now I've got my coverage through my company and I like it that way. I know how to do it. I don't have to go get it on my own. How might these exchanges impact what our bosses, our employers are doing?
Well, the exchanges, what the general theory behind them is they're essentially health insurance marketplaces where individuals and even small businesses can go and shop for and purchase health insurance policies for themselves or for businesses for their employees. You can essentially go to these marketplaces, these online marketplaces. You can shop and compare different coverages side by side. In theory, this will lead to better access to health insurance coverage for everyone. That's sort of the theory behind them. There will be one in Washington State, as well as every other state in the country, beginning in 2014. And so there's a possibility that employers, as we move forward in implementing the health care reform legislation, might move away from the current system, which is where employers will provide health insurance coverage for their employees. And like you said, you know, a lot of people like it that way. And you know, they may move away from that and move more towards pushing their employees into these exchanges where they can go and buy coverage for themselves. And, you know, there may be subsidies that employers might provide, whereas instead of having their own health insurance plan that they provide to their employees, they might give each employee a certain number of dollars, a subsidy to go and buy their own health insurance coverage through the exchange. And, you know, that could be seen as a good thing or a bad thing, depending on your point of view.
Because we could be losing that as a benefit. We could be losing our coverage. That could be the wave of the future.
That's right. It could be. And, you know, obviously it could be spun the other way as well, I suppose, that it's, you know, your employees will have access to a broader range of possible health plans that they want. But it will certainly be different, a different way of looking at things. And really, a lot of it will depend on each individual employer, what it, you know, its own cost benefit analysis and what the employer, you know, wants to do for its employees. But it certainly the bottom line is going to be changing the landscape of health coverage in general in the United States.
How come you could do in 8 minutes what I've been trying to figure out for months? Great job breaking it down for us, Garrett Fenton. Thank you for being with us on Newsline PM. Looking forward to talking to you more about this because this issue is not going anywhere and neither is some of that traffic. Let's check in.
What happens next happens on the Como Afternoon News today at 3. Now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
It is 19 after 12. Elisa Jaffe in for Ken Schramm. Boy, did things heat up yesterday when the King County Council picked Dino Rossi to fill in the Senate vacancy left by ex-state Senator Cheryl Flug. You won't believe how things were flying. Even the state chair, Kirby Wilbur, Republican state chair, got involved in it with some pretty harsh comments. Josh Veit, the editor from Publicola, here to break it all down for us. Boy, Josh, this was a dogfight, wasn't it?
Yeah, Republicans are going at each other pretty hard over this one. I guess Kirby Wilbur, you're right, threw a temper tantrum. And basically said that Cheryl Flug, no one cares what she says. She's irrelevant. She's not a Republican anymore. which are all obviously untrue. A, she's obviously a Republican. She was one of the key votes on the Republican budget that passed the state Senate this year. And she's obviously, people care what she says, or else Kirby wouldn't have thrown such a tantrum.
Okay, so let's do it simply on exactly what happened. So Cheryl Flug's position is open. King County Council picks Dino Rossi, the guy who ran for governor twice, to fill this vacancy.
And then for Senate once, he lost all three times.
Yeah, I know John Carlson says he makes him look like he did really well. Okay, so Dino Rossi is now taking over this seat, and it's a seat that Flug was appointed to by Governor Gregoire.
That's right.
Or she was appointed by the governor the Growth Management Hearing
Board. That's right. That's right. She was appointed to the Senate seat a long time ago and through the same process. So Wilbur's calling her a hypocrite for condemning the GOP process. She was most recently appointed by the governor to a state board. So that's a different topic, different issue.
So now Rossi goes in, he gets to take the seat, and Flug issues a statement, even though she is a moderate Republican, saying Dino Rossi asserts publicly that he was drafted to fill my vacancy. But in truth, she says that there was some strong arming, that the Senate committee strong armed the local Republican grassroots to get Rossi nominated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
those are fighting words.
Those are fighting words. I mean, and, you know, I don't know. I've not done any reporting on the process. I think, you know, she has endorsed the Democrat. So Rossi's going to temporarily fill the seat, but there's an election going on between a Democrat and a Republican, and she's backing the Democrat. So, you know, she's stirring up trouble. I don't know what the substance or veracity of her accusations are. Really, I can't speak to that.
But let's look at what Kirby Wilbur, the state chair, said after this
to
Cheryl Flug. He said, basically, Flug you. And added, nobody cares. She's not a Republican anymore. Nobody cares what she says. Obviously, that can't completely be the case.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, obviously Kirby cares quite a deal, or else he wouldn't have thrown such a temper tantrum about it. And he says she's not a Republican, which makes absolutely zero sense. Again, she was the key vote, one of the key votes on the Republican coup this past legislative session when they passed the Republican budget. She did vote for gay marriage. She's seen as a moderate Republican for that. So, you know, that breaks it down, but she's obviously a Republican. And I think she made a really good point in her comments. You know, she basically, I think what she's pointing to is that the Republican Party has become, it would appear with Kirby Wilbur, just you have to be lockstep. There's no room for moderates. And she said she endorsed the Democrat in this race because he brings people together. And she thinks that Rossi doesn't. Or she thinks that this Toft, who's running the Republican in the race, Toft, is not a moderate, is not bipartisan, and she's looking for kind of bipartisan solutions to problems. So I think she made a really good stand. I think people are sort of hungering for that right now.
And the Democrat she is supporting, we want to point out, is Mark Mullett,
That's right. He
is Issaquah City Council member and a business owner and paraglider when he's got any spare time. Josh Veit, the editor of Publicola, with us right now. So, Rossi, he's back in the public eye, and, you know, too soon to go for governor this time. But are we going to see this again?
My sense would be absolutely not.
Really?
He said he's not, and I you know, he's run three times. I think he's gotten the message that he is not, you know, not popular statewide. I don't think you're going to see Dino Rossi stepping up again to run. No.
You really think that's the last of it? I know that he was. Did we hear anything about what he said about these comments from Flug?
I haven't heard his response.
Yeah, because I've been looking to see, and I didn't hear anything from him either.
Yeah, probably keeping his head down. You know, I'm going to take Dino Rossi's word on this one, that he's a placeholder. I think when the voters three times say no, particularly in 2010, which was a great year for Republicans nationally, and for him not to beat U.S. Senator Patty Murray with a bad economy, I think it's pretty clear that he's not the Republicans' go-to candidate anymore.
Josh Veit from Publicola. Thanks, Josh.
Time to discuss, dissect, and debate the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
12:29, Elisa Jaffe in this week for Ken Schramm. Puyallup police have a little bit of a problem on their hands. Seems some people are stealing air conditioning units as the weather's heating up. There are some hot units out there. They say that business owners and commercial property owners are noticing an increase of these thieves coming around and stealing a lot of the newer air conditioning units and leaving the old ones behind.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
12:35, Alisa Jaffe in this afternoon for Ken Schramm. And boy, people are fired up about some issues we've got going on in our area. You know, Seattle Parks and Rec held a big old meeting last night about the zip line over in West Seattle's Lincoln Park. And the community showed up in full force and said they don't want it. And this morning, the Parks Department has just issued a press release. I've got it in my hand, saying they've made the decision not to even proceed with the high ropes course at Lincoln Park. Now, these people had a lot of other things they could have done on a warm, sunny summer night, but they showed up there ready to say, we do not want a zip line in our area. A zip line that could have meant about $60,000 a year for the Parks Department, but Parks is saying, okay, we'll look elsewhere or do something else. There was another meeting last night about the arena, and more than 200 people packed North Seattle Community College and wanted to hear the answers to their questions at this town hall meeting. It was a meeting held by King County Councilmember Bob Ferguson and Seattle City Councilmember Mike O'Brien to answer the questions that our community has about Seattle's possible arena, the proposal for one in the SoTo area. And Mike O'Brien from the Seattle City Council, you handled it, huh? You're still standing today, Mike?
I'm still standing.
No bumps and bruises?
Oh, just a few, but nothing more than any community meeting.
Okay. So what was the, if you could say there was one really overwhelming concern, what would it have been?
One thing we heard a lot about last night on the concern side was what happens to Key Arena. We also heard a lot of questions about concerns about the industrial land and transportation and how that would affect the port.
You know, that's interesting about Key, because we haven't been talking much about Key Arena. We're talking about the port and the traffic and what it will mean to the economy and the good things, the bad things. But were they worried about workers at the Key or just the empty building? What was?
We heard from a number of current and former workers at the Key who some were expressing excitement for the Sonics to come back because they had lost their jobs when the Sonics left. Others were currently working at the Key and were worried that some of the business at the Key would shift to the arena and they might lose employment at the Key and not pick up employment at
but
the new arena.
But that's a valid concern. What'd you say?
Well, one of the things that's in the MOU is some pretty strong language with the owners about what we call like labor peace agreements, that is a commitment from the owners to be using, you know, to be paying essentially living wage, family wage jobs for those spots at the new arena. But I think we can explore going a step further and make sure that if some jobs are displaced at Key Arena, that those people would have kind of first dibs at jobs at the arena. I think that's a logical thing to do. You know, that's something that we'll be looking into in the next couple
weeks. Yeah, because it's hard to guarantee that, isn't it? When you're not the ones putting down the chunk, that's making Chris Hansen and those guys guarantee that.
Absolutely. They've been you know, one of the issues that I think they've been very good on is labor issues and the types of people that will be doing the work, both construction work and operating that arena. And so what that commitment looks like, I don't know, but I think there's probably a place where we can get a commitment that folks displaced from Key Arena would have first dibs on those jobs. You know, they still have to apply and qualify and do what we normally do, but they would be the top of the list at least.
Hey, Mike, has Chris Hansen made it pretty clear to you guys, abundantly clear, that there's no way, no how he would invest in the Key Arena if you guys even handed him the key?
He's made it clear that that is not going to be acceptable for an NBA arena. You know, it pains me to hear that because on the one hand, we have this arena that seemed to be working fine 10 or 15 years ago, but it's also consistent with what we've heard over the last decade, you know, from NBA and other owners who wanted to bring pro basketball or keep pro basketball here in Seattle. And so it's something that I'm kind of accepting at this point as a reality. What Chris Hansen has said is that he's willing to explore some investments in the arena going forward. Certainly the Sonics, if they were to return, would have to play somewhere in a temporary home, which would be the Key Arena for a couple years.
Wouldn't that be sort of fun?
It would be sort of fun. I was actually thinking about that on my way home last night, about what those 2 years would be like, 2 or 3 years in, if we get there.
Oh, if I could get my old seats back. Loved my seats at the Key. So he has said that would be a possibility, because you got to have some place to play.
Certainly he would be playing there. That's part of the plan. And to bring pro basketball even there, on a pro men's basketball on a short-term basis, would require some investments in the Key, and he would be making those. And when he moves the team to the new arena, you know, those investments, those, you know, like telecommunications and internet infrastructure improvements and other minor improvements would stay with the arena. But that's not going to solve the problem for the arena. I mean, long-term, we have to figure out what we want to do with that, and that's going to involve discussions with Seattle Storm, trying to understand where they want to be. Do they see the Key as their home, or is there a spot at the new arena for them? And that's going to be largely driven by the
ownership
of
Storm. I didn't even think about that.
And then, you know, the arena could be repositioned in the market for serving as different types of venues. We've talked about as a smaller concert venue, but all of that's going to require investment dollars, and those are investment dollars that the city just doesn't have right now and won't have for the next few years. So it's going to be in some partnership, and who that partnership would be with, we don't know. So there's opportunity there, and there's also some exposure, and we just have to be really thoughtful about what that looks like.
Mike O'Brien from the Seattle City Council, fresh off the heels of a big town hall meeting last night where people got to ask any questions they wanted about the proposed new arena in Seattle's SoDo neighborhood. And I'm wondering, how did you handle it when people are saying, you know what, doesn't matter to me, public money shouldn't be spent on professional sports?
You know, that's a hard one for me, because you know, deep in my heart, I think I agree with the fundamentals of that. You look at professional sports, not just in this city but across the country, and the salaries that they pay and the money that the owners have, it's hard to justify using any public resources at all.
Sure is, when we got kids struggling in schools.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, what I heard over and over again, and last night we heard it, is there's a big chunk of the population in the city and in the region, including low-income folks, who really want this professional team back. And the reality today and any time in the near future is that to bring a professional sports team, or even keep a professional sports team in cities, because cities are competing against each other, there needs to be some sort of partnership. And so I think where we are today is, you know, the MOU is proposed. I think most folks agree, whether you like the Sonics coming back or not, that it's a pretty good deal. I mean, compared to what other cities have got, compared to what Seattle's had in the past. And I think the question is it good enough? And for me, the critical thing is that we're not going to be diverting any money away from things like schools and parks and public safety and the other day-to-day operations of the city to make this happen. And I think the statement so far is that it's intended to do that. We do use public bonding capacity, but to pay back those bonds, we're using all revenues generated on the arena. So it's not, we're not raising any new taxes, and we still have other bonding capacity if we wanted to go out and bond for other projects.
You had some folks there, I know, that were worked at the port, and they were wondering, why would you even consider jeopardizing maritime commerce?
It's a good question, you know, and the numbers, depending on who you talk to, vary. 100,000 jobs, 200,000 jobs. Clearly, the port and that whole maritime industrial section of Seattle is a great jobs creator in the region. And not just jobs, but a lot of those jobs are really good wage jobs, good family wage jobs that, you know, people we all know, our neighbors and our family members, you know, we grew up with those jobs and those supported us. And so it's really important to protect that. I disagree when it's framed as we either get pro basketball in SoDo and we lose 100,000 jobs, mm-hmm. or we keep the jobs and we can't have pro basketball. And so for me, it's understanding what are the specific pressures that this arena is going to put on that industrial land and the job base down there, and how do we mitigate against that. And, you know, it's going to be a judgment call, and I'm sure that at the end of the day we're going to continue to disagree, but I think it's important to understand that I think all the members of the city and county council really care about
10 seconds left, Mike. Have you decided if you're going for it? You going for the proposal or not yet?
The proposal, as it's written today, it needs some work. And I'm committed to doing that work to get to a place where hopefully the owners in the county and my colleagues on the city council can have something that I can support and vote for.
So you sound hopeful.
I'm optimistic. Yeah.
Okay. Mike O'Brien from the Seattle City Council, thanks for taking time to be with us on Newsline PM. Time for a check on traffic.
Time to discuss, dissect, and debate the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Alisa Jaffe in this afternoon for Ken Schramm. It's 12 minutes before 1. You know, we've heard about the Seattle City Council and the King County Council members, how they're saying they're doing what they can to go forward with this arena deal, checking to see what the taxpayers want, looking at the hedge fund manager, Chris Hansen, and what his promises are. And our Como 4 problem solver, Jonathan Humbert, asked a question that it sounds like nobody had seemed to address before you walked into the room. What's up with that?
Well, a lot of people have positive feelings about this arena. A lot of people have a lot of good feelings about the finances of it. Mayor McGinn and County Executive Dow Constantine were very proud to say no taxpayer money is going to be spent on this arena. Well, we asked the question, what does this memorandum of understanding? That's the golden ticket.
Yeah, because everybody keeps calling it the MOU. And I'm like, what's an MOU?
That is what it is. Okay. Memorandum of understanding. Essentially, look at that as the gateway to get this all done. The golden ticket that Chris Hansen needs to start getting a shovel in the ground and to show the leagues we're for real here in Seattle. So the text of that says, okay, all these consultants and lawyers and everybody that the city and the county is paying to get all the ducks in a row right now, if the MOU is passed, Chris Hansen will pay back up to $5 million.
That's a lot of money. How much might it cost to do even potentially?
It could potentially be more because, again, Lisa, think about this. We are sitting in a situation where this started last summer. We're now at $593,000 on the city alone, and that's just in a few months. So that
on consultants and attorneys,
we're talking anywhere from $360 an hour to $520 an hour.
Gotta get the wrong
expenses.
Job.
Sounds like it, right?
Yeah.
But we love what we do.
Okay.
But we get to ask these questions. That's the beauty of why we get to do this job. So I said, all right, well, that's great. I mean, it's wonderful that Chris Hansen is doing this and going beyond what other folks may be expected to do.
He's paying $5 million possibly toward all the consulting fees, the
you
legal
bet.
Fees, everything if he gets his arena.
If it passes. So I said, what if it doesn't pass? And I asked that question to some of the county council members, and I asked that directly to Mayor McGinn, the guy who's been leading this project, the guy who should know exactly how things work.
What was his face like when you asked that question?
He smiled and said, I don't know. He does not know the answer to the question that if this MOU goes down and this if arena does not pass by council votes, if people and the critics continue to mount and it doesn't pass, he and no one else, it seems, knows what happens to that $593,000 tab and more taxpayers have already paid for.
Back up. They don't know. Nobody asked that question.
Apparently not.
How big could it be if we keep going forward? Now, I mean, what are the possibilities? If Chris Hansen is saying it could be $5 million by the time it's done, it could be easily $2 million. Before
at
we
least.
Even find out if anything happens.
Well, and here's to give you some comfort of as well. The county.
Well, you
doesn't
didn't give
even,
me any so far, so.
No, and this won't be comforting either. The
okay.
county doesn't even know its tab yet. One of the county council members has asked them to begin adding up what they owe and what they've already spent. Again,
right.
this money is spoken for. These contracts are signed. A lot of this money's already spent and out the door. And it doesn't appear, after asking the direct question, what are the protections and the provisions to back up the promises of no taxpayer mm-hmm. money being spent, what's going to happen if it does go belly up? And no one knows.
John, how come none of us thought to ask that question? What were you doing? Were you just sitting around one day and said, you know, what's going to
I've been sitting in enough of these meetings, I probably should have, right? Well, we didn't. We discovered the issue of a lot of these arena contracts in the early part of the spring to say, what are we spending on this and what happens? Mm-hmm. Well, the belief was, and at the time, it was rightfully so, that the county council and the king and the city of Seattle councils were very, very on board with this. So the issue wasn't really that big of a deal. But then the number kept going up. It was originally around $125,000. Some of these contracts got extended for twice their lifetime and for more than double the amount. And the tab just keeps going up. So when we saw that $593,000 figure, which is open-ended, which does not have an end in sight, which does not have a final dollar figure.
And that doesn't even include what the county has
absolutely.
Spent that you don't even know yet.
Absolutely. Not even sure about that. So everyone assumes seems, well, it'll pass and Chris will pay it back. And that's good. And that's certainly understood. And that's a good thing that he's doing from even the critics' perspective. They're happy that Hansen's doing that. But I also asked his people, what happens if it does go belly up? Are you on the hook for that? There's nothing in paper, in writing, that anyone can point to right now to tell me that Hansen will pay that back. And if he gets told no, hit the bricks, pal, by the county and the council, he doesn't have to pay it back, according to what we know now. And it would be up to his generosity to pay back after he's been told no.
Come up for a problem solver, John Humbert. Well, thank goodness you're asking the question. And so what did everybody say they're going to do now that you've asked that question?
I think they're going to continue asking that question as well. There are going to be some meetings next week, some pretty big, powerful meetings, including a joint meeting between the two councils that'll happen next Thursday. And I think hopefully there will be some answer for this, or at least to explain what it may be, because we simply don't know right now, and the tab keeps growing.
That's really pretty alarming, wouldn't you say?
Well, it just goes, it's not so much the problem that it's taxpayer money being spent, because that's what these councils do, but it's a disconnect between we were promised no new taxes and no taxpayer money spent on this. A, the money's already gone and is already being spent, but there's also no backstop and absolute guarantee that that money isn't gone from the
I wonder how much it's going to cost us in legal fees and consultant fees in order to draw up the paperwork in order to feel like we've got a promise and how to pay for this. So now, that's going to cost more money
too.
That will want it. Yeah. That's your fault.
Well, I'm sorry.
Okay. Good job, John. Jonathan Humbert from our Como 4 Problem Solvers.
This is Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Surprise, surprise. We're hearing now that the House has voted for the second time to repeal the Affordable Health Care Act. In a little bit, we'll be hearing from Congressman Dave Reichert on which way he voted. Yeah, you can guess, but we'll be talking to him anyway. American Airlines is looking for a merger partner as it emerges from bankruptcy, and it's listed a bunch of different partners, potential partners, including U.S. Airways and JetBlue. But what's this going to mean to you? ABC News travel editor Genevieve Brown says it's not so good.
The most likely outcome is going to be higher fares, and that's most concerning for consumers who have seen prices on airfare go up consistently over the last several years.
So we will end up paying the price. Of course we will. Coming up, we're going to be talking about that meltdown in the skies and what's to blame, lack of sleep. How tired are the people piloting our planes? That's coming up.